Shall we discuss the actor?
Yeah.
We did talk about it. We're still not clear on a couple of things.
Yeah.
How the actor could be committing akusakamapata by just encouraging others to have more lobha or dosa.
Like anyone.
Can you clarify that?
Family Dharma can be conditioned for any akusala kamma patha, any time. But by accumulation of such action, what about the citta at that moment?
Can we think of a solid example of how it could be akusala kamma patha?
I think that we cannot think about kamma and condition for kamma and the vipaka of kamma. But without the akusala, Dharma, can there be condition for akusala kamma?
Okay, so we know that the actor is having a lot of akusala citta, definitely.
Don't call that actor, anyone.
Just akusala citta is arising.
A lot of
akusala
citta. Yeah. Well, she's saying it needn't be an actor, it could be
anyone
doing the same sort of conduct.
Didn't Buddha say that anyone who commit akusala kamma will receive the result?
But the actor's not actually doing that akusala kamma. He's not killing, he's just pretending to kill.
And he will.
He will accumulate.
As long as there are conditions. One thing about only actor. And what about the horse rider? And what about the
soldier?
Yeah.
It's easier for people to understand a soldier, say.
Just anyway.
But I think you were saying yesterday the actor and the cook,
like
not
other,
the same.
Like other. The cook will kill too one day. Who knows? Yeah.
What about the person that was ordered to kill and then because if he doesn't do it, then he's going to be killed himself or...
Because he's in the danger of killing. Yeah, that's all.
So, I mean, for instance, like if a person who has studied Dhamma...
If you think about just Dhamma, then the answer is the same for everyone.
Yeah.
No matter what we call killing or whatever.
For instance, if I were, let's say, knowing what I know about Dhamma now, and let's say I were at an age where I'd be called up for military service, and then I'm put into some regiment that's sent to the front zone somewhere, and I'm told to kill.
What did that then?
What
did that then?
When at the time that I'm told that I'm aiming the rifle and all this kind of thing, there can't be any positive.
Depending on citta and citta.
There can't be any kusala at that time.
Mm-hmm.
This has to be aversion.
Huh?
Has to be aversion towards the object.
Yes. Because they have these stories, for instance, about these female suicide bombers, Palestinian suicide bombers. They're told to put the bombs, whatever, under their burqa they wear, and they go to some place and they blow it up along with themselves. And it's come to light that in many of these cases, the woman has been told by her family that she's done something to dishonor the family, and in order to regain the honor of the family, of course it's all pipanyati, but that's the story anyway, that in order to regain the honor of the family, she's got to do this blow up that particular place and herself, and if she refuses to do it, then the father in the family feels perfectly right to murder her.
And jitasikas. No one at all.
So no matter what the story is,
so the story pushes her to do it. Yeah, concepts.
I've got a couple of quick questions here. In the Atasalani about pasa contact, it says, why is contact mentioned here first? Because of it being the first incidence of consciousness on an object and arises touching the object, therefore it's mentioned first. Touching by contact, consciousness experiences by feeling, perceives by perception, wills by volition, etc. But as we know, all the chaitasikas, universal chaitasikas, arise with the citta at the same moment, so there's not actually any first. So what does it mean when it says, talks about the first incidents of consciousness?
Of the jetasikas, what touch?
Well, only pasa touches, but it doesn't touch before vedana feels or...
But jetana doesn't touch.
I see. So it just means that it is the first to touch because...
The touch.
Just the touching.
Or feeling and other.
I see. If there's no touching, there's no feeling.
Together at the same time.
But what Carl wants to say...
I wonder if that's a sort of a translation problem there, Amanda.
And we say, okay, if there's no touching, there's no feeling and the other associated chetasikas, but we could also say if there's no feeling, there's no touching because they all condition each other.
All among chetasikas, what touched?
Only hasa, so that's all it means.
What's your point, Rob? About the translation?
I just wondered that translation meant first or it's...
Why is contact mentioned first? So any reason why it's mentioned first? Just why should touching be mentioned before feeling? Or
okay, then touch. What are there? Yeah. Then there's no touching.
So it's like predominance.
It seems like we can know everything, mm-hmm. but as it's touching, it touches.
Touch, that's all. We know there are many terms or words to describe citta. Citta is named hadiya because it's an inward reality. Citta is internal because it's the reality which experiences the object which appears. The object is outside. Why is citta called hadiya? Because it's the internal inward reality. What does this mean?
Where is it?
Well, hadiya is the base, so
hadiya?
This is...
Another word for citta.
Another word for citta is hadiya. Mm-hmm. That's all.
Where is it now? See? The innest thing is citta.
I see. Innermost. What about citta seekers?
Out,
sorry.
Because without citta, how can there be jetasika? In.
So it's referring to the ayatana.
It doesn't matter. As we know that without realities, there cannot be anything appearing at all. So all ayatas must be there.
So
all ayatanas must be there at moment of experiencing an object.
So can one say it's called hadiya because it's the inner?
Yes, but not ayatana. You mean hadiya
citta?
Another, not hadiya vattu?
No, just hadiya. Mm-hmm. Citta is called mind mano or manasa, heart hadaya, that which is pure, para, mind-based manayatani, faculty of mind, manindriya, consciousness vinyana, the kanda of consciousness, vijnana kanda, the element of mind consciousness, mano vijnana dhatu. So it was just hadiya.
Just to understand citta now.
This was a question actually which Lucas asked before. The Patisambhada Magga talks about elements and other dhatu to be directly known, abhinyaya. But when it comes to the parts of the body, kesalomanaka, and states each part is to be directly known, I think it just means the elements which we refer to as kesalomanaka are to be directly known. Okay, so when it lists all these different various body parts, skin, flesh, bones, kidney, heart, liver, etc., to be directly known, what it's referring to are the rupas referred to as skin, heart, liver, to be directly known. And when it comes to the part about birth and death to be directly known, as in Paticca Samuppada, here the jati is referring to birth and marana is to death. I mean, we know in an ultimate sense it's birth and death at each moment, but when it's referring to birth and death, the first and last moments of life to be directly known, does this mean by the Buddha or what does it mean?
Depending on the accumulation. Does anyone know the moment of birth?
Does anyone know
the moment
of birth?
Well, I would think only the very wise.
When?
Well, and even. Exactly, I mean at that moment.
At moment of birth.
No. So
but
only.
What about beings that are born spontaneously, like there's a body, there's
the same moment.
Okay, it would have to be those who had developed jhana, who or
when
later. It would have to be after.
Yeah, when there are abhinya that can know any past citta directly.
But not at moment of birth.
Not both.
That's all. And what about Buddha?
Well, he could know anything, any
birth.
Yes.
What about Buddha?
He could know
when?
Later, of course.
Mm-hmm. Truth must be truth.
Truth must be truth. It must be later, because otherwise, if it was at the moment of birth, he would be enlightened already. Just briefly touching back on akasa. So there are two kinds of akasa, and when we list the 28 rupa, paricheda rupa, a space element, akasa dhatu, I think under paricheda rupa here, both kinds must be included.
Akasa is akasa.
So both can be referred to as paricheda, not just...
Only paricheda rupa is conditioned akasa.
Yeah. But when it lists the rupa as paricheda and says this refers to akasa, we know that both kinds of akasa are rupa, but...
There are two kinds of akasa.
Yes.
But when we talk about paricheda rupa, it is the conditioned...
Only conditioned one.
Akasa only.
But actually in...
Akasa itself is akasa.
Yes.
No matter it's conditioned or unconditioned, we cannot change the characteristic of akasa.
But when we... Because akasa, both kinds of akasa, rupa, are rupa. So in the list given of the 28 rupas...
It is later. It doesn't matter.
Because akasa is akasa.
I'm a bit intrigued by unconditioned akasa. What makes it different from nibbana, which is the unconditioned?
Nibbana is not akasa because there is akasa now, but not nibbana now.
So is this the unconditioned akasa? Oh, right, so it's that simple.
When it's unconditioned, it is the unconditioned akasa.
This could be the wind element. This could be the wind
element. We just talk about that which is not conditioned.
It doesn't mean there are kalapas of rupas, but the unconditioned rupas where there are no kalapas of rupas. Mm. Paricheda signifies not only that which delimits parichindati, but also that which is delimited parichijati. The implication is that since akasa dhatu means cavities, etc., sets limits to or is limited by surrounding matter, so this delimits and delimited, would you say this can also only be referring to the paricheda rupa, but between kalapas. We can't refer to
the definition of akasa to understand what akasa is.
Yes, well, this is what it says. Sometimes when it defines akasa, it talks about that which delimits and that which is delimited. So I'm just wondering if these terms can only refer to...
No, we just think about akasa. That's all.
But that description correctly describes the Parijita Rupa, doesn't it?
Yes.
Delimits and is delimited by.
Delimits and is delimited by.
Yeah.
But the open space, the nothing where there are no kalapas, we can't say it is limited or bought or anything like that.
What about when there are kalapas, very tiny? So we don't think much, just akasa is akasa.
And what when I wrote about it, what someone said was they asked for any sutta reference because I quoted from the Atasarani and the Melinda Panha, so they asked if there are any
sutta reference.
Sorry?
Is that not enough?
Well, it was enough for me, but... yeah.
Well, what was that article by Karina Dasa that you quoted any good? You quoted from this?
Yeah,
well,
some parts good and some parts questionable. Yeah. So, I mean, a lot of information.
Yeah.
What was interesting was completely different from another article we wrote about.
Yeah, I told you that, didn't I?
Actually, that part I just quoted was from...
Oh, from his book.
Yeah, but he tends to sort of summarize from text, and then you look in text and it's a little bit different.
Oh, is it?
I mean that. Is that not enough to understand reality right now?
Yeah, of course.
Because this brings us away from reality right now.
It's just one of those fine points though, that people debate about, so it's good to get some finality or something, some clarity.
So
that at that moment is the moment of turning away, not coming back or near the reality at all.
What
take
people,
one's away all the time.
What people find very disturbing is when you've heard Nibbana is the unconditioned reality, and then suddenly it's like they hear there is another unconditioned reality, so they find that very difficult.
But it's also in the in the Abhidhamma, in the debates, the Katavatu, they mention that akasa is considered like that too, isn't it?
They seem to refer to it as a concept. Yes. But I think one has to read it in the whole context.
Well, I think the other thing that Nina was puzzled by was it doesn't appear in the list of 28 rupas, except as a Parijita rupa.
That's what it is.
Word for akasa.
Yes.
Just another word.
But you say there's two forms of akasa.
When we talk about akasa, is there only the Parijita rupa?
Well,
what about now, here?
Yeah. But in the list...
It doesn't
words,
matter.
No, but... Yeah. I'm
that which arises and they arise together as different kalapas with space in between. That's why the conditioned akasa can be conditioned by kamma or citta or utu or ahara.
She says it's like saying there are five paramatta dharmas, three citta, cetasika and rupa, which are conditioned, and two unconditioned, nibbana and open space. But we know there are only four paramatta dharmas, so it sounds like introducing another paramatta.
The commentaries explain it. How else are they that way? How else are you going to talk about it? I mean, can they do?
Can we talk about the paramatta dharmas, citta, cetasika, rupa, and nibbana by different manners?
Mm. Yes.
Different ways, just to
bring out the
points. Like we can talk about the six vijnana, or the seven, see? Or the vijnana and the Mahabhuta Rupa and Akasa includes everything. Because without Mahabhuta Rupa, can other Rupa arise? Something like that. It's the way of explaining.
It's a bit like your question the other day about different kinds of panya. I mean, it's like different kinds of vedana. Sometimes we refer to three, sometimes six, sometimes 108, but actually it's unlimited because each vedana is different, and so the same with panya, just different classifications. But
not necessarily limited to that.
Just one's understanding about realities.
This was a question asked about the great 40, the Mahachatari Saka Sutta in Majjhima. At the end of the sutta, it said there are 20 factors on the wholesome side and 20 on the unwholesome side. Together they make up the great 40. Now, it's easy to find 10 and 10, so the right 8 path factors plus right knowledge, right deliverance, in the case of the arahat, are 10, and the opposite are 10. And then, so then we get 20, and then it says 20 factors on the wholesome side and 20 on the unwholesome side originate from these. So we end up with the 10 path factors plus 10 factors on the wholesome side that originate from these, and then 10 wrong path factors and 10 unwholesome ones that originate from this. So then we get the great 40. What is it referring to by the 10 wholesome ones that originate from the first 10 and the 10 unwholesome ones originating from the unwholesome 10? So we've got the 10 plus the 10.
What are they?
The first 10 are starting with samaditti, the 8 path factors, plus right knowledge and right deliverance, sama, vimuti.
Ten
right. And then the opposite, the nicca, including nicca vimuti. And then from this 20, the text says there are 10 further factors on the wholesome side originating from the first 10.
And what is the first 10?
The first 10 starting with samaditti and so on. And then, so if we just start with sticking
10
awesome.
And then
10.
And originated then, from the first?
From the first 10. And then.
So now 20.
Now 20. Yeah. And then 10 unwholesome and 10 unwholesome originating.
20.
So then 40.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But going back to the wholesome set, so the 10 path factors, including and up to sama vimuti, and then the 10 wholesome factors originating from these, what are they?
The first samaditi, right? With our samaditi,
yes,
no, 20, 40. Because you see that samaditi develops,
yes,
on and on and on and on,
yes,
until it's completed to the right deliverance.
Yes.
So the other also comes from the first one.
The first one. Okay, so then we have the first 10. So the first is samaditi, and the other 9 come from samaditi. That's 10. And then, so sticking with the wholesome ones, what is number 11?
What do you mean by 11? When it develops, it's still 1, not 11.
So how do we get to 20? Because we've got to end up with 40. So how do we... What is the second lot of 10?
1 10 is 10. 2 10 is 20.
You can't just double it.
Can we think that everything comes from samaditti?
Yes,
and
we
it's
can think
to
that.
The end.
Yes.
The samma.
Yes. Okay, so we could say the first 10 are these 10 factors, and then we can just say any other wholesome factors, any other wholesome ones come from this 10. So it's like these 10 have an extra effect, something like that. But again, it could be any number, but they just give this number. Okay. I sort of see that, just a way of counting. Asavas, Now, asavas are always a little bit difficult because, like, I think you often say, asavas, I mean, it's more than anusiyas, but it's not yet nivarana. So it's the influx or the intoxicants that manifest, but not yet as nivarana.
Can we say that it manifests when it's not panya?
You mean when it's not revealed? Well, it arises, we can say.
Yes, we have. Only panya can see that, because even the rupa hasn't fallen away yet, it's there.
Mm.
When time comes,
mm-hmm.
after seeing, after sampaditana santirina, it's there.
Yes.
So who knows?
Yes. So it's the unknown kilesa, but not yet of the strength of nivarana. Is this correct? And
even nivarana, who knows, when it's
only,
not panya.
No, only panya. Why is dosa not nasava?
From birth. Asava from birth, usually what is there? Attachment in the day.
Mm-hmm.
So attachment is there.
You mean from the very beginning?
Yeah. On and on and on.
On and on.
When there's no understanding.
But because of attachment, isn't dosa there more or less from the beginning?
Kamasava. Tithasava.
Yes, but no.
Ovasava. Yes,
but
see?
No dosasava.
Not yet.
I see.
Usually.
I see. Not until
the flux is obvious form.
So not usually dosa.
Otherwise, everything is flux.
Yes. So are you saying only when it arises of the strength of nivarana or something, then
because
it does
they're dosa. Like intoxicant from day to day, from moment to moment, so fast enough to arise as soon as it's time for it.
So does that imply always moha and longa
kamasava, tithasava
before
dosa. Just chipping it, but going back to the Actor Sutra, because of the words intoxicated and heedless, do they have any special meaning?
Any moment.
So?
Not just acting.
Yeah, but
when the actor came to see the Buddha, should he talk about the other person?
No. But I'm just wondering about the meaning of intoxicated and heedless as describing the person who commits, you know, the bad karma and the person.
And now what intoxicates? This moment.
This moment? What intoxicates?
So yesterday there seemed to be a suggestion that in the actor's life the akusala might be particularly strong, but now you're suggesting, well, if it was a kuho, anyone who came to see the Buddha, he may have said just the same thing. It's because for anyone there is
to the accumulations of the person. Because now we are not actor.
No.
And what about our accumulation? See, we didn't have to think about like actors at all.
Are you familiar with Piya Rupa and Satta Rupa? So what we understand from Piya Rupa and Satta Rupa is that anything which has a pleasing or delightful appearance is Piya Rupa or Satta Rupa, not just
nama.
Rupas. So includes nama. So anything other than Lokutra Chitas, anything that can be the object of attachment is.
Another way to express that which can be object of attachment.
Yes. Do you have any idea why Rupa is in the word? Why they call it Pia Rupa Sata Rupa?
Because they're it does mean just the visible objects.
Yeah? No, also the seeing, hearing. We had some discussion about the distinction between Oja, nutritive essence, which is one of the inseparable rupas, and ahara as one of the conditioning factors of rupas. And I believe that when external food is taken, there has to be oja, the nutritive essence, which digests it. So actually often they're used interchangeably, ahara and oja, but actually they're not the same. Is this?
Actually they're the same.
They are the same. Exactly the same?
Yeah, it depends on what word you use.
Yeah. I mean the difference.
Because another meaning of ahara is that which will bring results. So it can be pasa. And no sanjetanahara, vinyanahara.
Nina quoted from the Guide to Conditional Relations by Narada, we have to distinguish between external food that's taken and internal nutritive essence, oja. The latter can only produce other rupas when supported by external food. That's correct. If this is not the case, oja can only support other rupas. It cannot produce new rupas. But actually, we could then be referring to ahara there also as
inseparable.
So it's exactly the same. And someone said, what is the difference between oja and nutrition of one of the conditioning factors? And the friend wrote, ahara is one of the four causes which produce rupa next to karma, citta, and utu in the production of rupas. Ahara produces the 12 kinds of ahara, ja, rupas. Ahara produces oja as well, so this doesn't quite make sense because they're the same. And that's what I wondered. I always thought they were the same.
What's that from?
That's from somebody saying on a friend wrote. Someone asked, when we're talking about nutrition, do we refer to oja or to ahara? Nina said, when speaking about ahara pachya, it is ahara, not oja pachya. But when speaking about rupas of the body produced by nutrition, we say ahara ja rupa, not oja ja rupa. When speaking about the inseparables, the term oja is used. So they're just used in different contexts, but actually exactly the same reality. We've been having some discussion on the yamakas, and there's some confusion about whether the Bhumis is referring to cheetahs or claims of existence. And someone wrote that whenever abhachara is used, it always refers to types of cheetah, never to realms of existence. Is that right? As in kama, abhachara, bhumi would always refer to cheetahs, never to claims of existence.
And what about this one place?
When referring to 31 planes, also can use the same expression, kama vachara bhumi.
Kama vachara or kama bhumi.
Yeah, same.
I think. Because we have to ask the Kuntampanna, right? Kama vachara.
For example, when it's talking in the Anusya Yamaka to the Anusya in the various spheres of existence here, Dhatu, Bara, would it be referring to the Anusya in the different 31 planes, do you think?
Yeah. No, when you talk about a plane, it's a plane. When you talk about Chitta and Chetasika.
Right, okay, so here it is. In the spheres of existence, here it would be different. For example, here, I mean, in this Pali, it's about karma, raga, nusaya, and then a little bit later it's reading about, referring to karma vatra, bhumiya, sukaya, cha, upekaya. So I'm just not sure if it's referring to the chitta or the plane.
Plane is over. Oh, what? What is plane?
Plane is 31 plane.
Place or plane. So it's not chitta when it's 31 plane.
Right, but it doesn't mention the 31 planes. It just mentions kama vatra, bhumiya. And Bhikkhu Bodhi said that as far as he knows, when it refers to kama vatra bhumi, it always refers to the planes of chitta, not
plane of existence.
Not plane of existence. Is that correct? Yeah,
because it has the term vajra.
So it's the chitta. Yeah.
And what's the meaning of vajra?
Pontio.
Okay.
It moves from here to there. Goes from place to place.
From eye to ear.
Like a monkey swinging through the jungle.
So if it is kama vatra, it must be the chitta's. Okay. And when it says, for example, where does the anusya of sensuous craving adhere to the two feelings, pleasant and indifferent, of sensuous fear? Why does it only such as where anger to painful bodily or mental feeling? I thought that the anusya lie dormant in all chittas.
How many anusya?
Seven. So that just means each anusya lies dormant with particular kinds of.
As long as Lokudra Chitta does not arise yet,
yes.
It's there, each one.
Anusya A, B, etc.
Seven.
So when it says the first one adheres to pleasant or indifferent feeling, it's just describing that anusya, actually. Is that correct?
What kind?
So this would
there
be
seven.
Seven, okay. So the first one, I've just forgotten what the Pali word is.
Kamaraga.
Okay. So when it says that the Kamaraga anusya adheres to pleasant and indifferent feeling,
what about the object? Clinging to object.
It's just describing the
clinging to kind of to kama.
Okay.
Raka is clinging,
yeah.
And kama is to objects. Sense objects.
Right, so it's just describing its object.
Sensuous object.
So they're all latent in every chitta.
They're all latent, so that's why I was confused when it said where does the bias of sensuous craving adhere to the two feelings, but it doesn't mean it's only lying dormant in those
chitters.
Kinds of chittas. Right. It's just describing the object of that anusya. Okay. Okay, this is an interesting one. Four arousals of craving. Craving in a monk arises in a monk because of robes, arms, lodging, being and not being. Iti bhava abhava hetu for the last one, being and not being. But the commentary says, because of craving, he thinks, I will receive a pleasing robe. Because of robes, he will have rebirth and different existences. The term bhava abhava is explained with another example, fruits and not fruits, pala apala, which acquires the meaning of all sorts of fruits. Thus, all sorts of rebirths is meant. The commentary mentions craving for oil, honey, and ghee. These are supports for the sick, the four aspects. So what it's saying is actually the fourth kind of craving
iti bhava abhava hetu for being a non-being actually refers to craving for oil, honey and ghee.
And other things.
And other things.
Okay.
Et cetera, et cetera. Okay, okay. So these are just examples of what it is. Okay.
It was something we talked about yesterday. Every moment of kusala is samatha, calm, but it does not appear as it is so quick. When there is more kusala in a day, then samatha begins to appear. And you also mentioned something about when there's panya, like brief moments of panya, there has to be concentration with the panya that arises with panya. Is it like that concentration becomes more obvious when there's more panya? Is that what you said?
Isn't there concentration now?
Well, it's manasikara, isn't it?
No, not manasikara. Concentration.
Well, I could say there is concentration because there's concentration.
Is there anyone know?
Anyone?
No.
Know it? Well, it has to be panya that knows it.
So even it's here and now, no one knows.
Okay, so it doesn't appear until there's panya.
Yeah.
So that samatha wouldn't appear either without panya.
So.
No.
Many people ask whether is this kusala or is that akusala? See, keep on thinking about that.
Or they think it's kusala just because they're following a particular activity.
Well, I was thinking in terms more of the concentration. You know, people think they're concentrating, but
kusala without akusala concentration.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I heard on the tape, Dok Mai Long. Dok Mai Long. Is that right?
Dok Mai.
Dok Mai Long. This was a simile for Kiriya Chitta.
Dok Mai Long.
Long. I don't know. Long.
Dok Mai thi mai mi phol.
Oh, I see.
Dok la toh mai mi phol.
Okay. Particular kind of flower, is it?
No. Sunflower.
Yes.
That doesn't bear fruit at all.
I see. Yeah. So you call them Dok Mai Long.
Kiriya Chitta. Dok Mai Long. Long. Long is like wind.
I see.
Dok Mai Long. When we talk about Lom, when we talk about Lom, we cannot touch. We cannot see.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't show up. Dok Mai Long. When we talk about Lom, we cannot see Lom. We cannot touch Lom. See? So, Dok Mai Long, nothing.
I see.
Yeah. Doesn't bear fruit.
What was the...
The discussion was about Kiriya Chitta. Dok Mai is flower, and Lom is wind. So, I was a bit puzzled by it, so I just asked. And Ajahn explains that Dok Mai Long means a flower that doesn't bear fruit.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's non-existent, is that right?
Like Kiriya Chitta.
Like Kiriya Chitta.
Action doesn't bring about the result.
Right.
Yeah. And when we think about something which is very not usual and it doesn't bear any result, we use the term kit lom lom lang lang.
Lom lom
lang lang. Kit kit kit. Nothing happened. Lom lom lang lang.
What's lang lang?
The Thai has very
alliterative.
Yeah.
Oh, long, long, lang, lang.
Long, long, lang. The meaning is just long, and lang, lang doesn't mean anything. It just follow like retinues, attendants.
On another basis, you said about vipaka. You're talking about vipaka, and you said vipaka is macai lambak.
The Thai use vipaka very lambak.
Wing
lambak, wing vipaka.
Why not lambak? Isn't it lambak?
No. Oh. It just not use the right term in Thai language, not right meaning.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Vipaka in Thai means very, very lambak.
Oh.
Very hard, very hardship.
Okay.
But Pali is just the result.
So, yeah, good old
it can be.
Yeah. Kusala. Oh,
we use Pali in the wrong meaning in Thai language.
That's wrong.
Like arom. The Thai doesn't know that it is the object of citta.
Oh, aramana. Mm.
วันนี้อารมณ์ดี
yeah,
อารมณ์เสีย but actually it comes from experiencing the pleasant or unpleasant objects mm. through the senses
mm. what
so that can condition อารมณ์ดี good mood
so mixing up vipaka and karma and
right.
jhana and even panya
yeah daily so very daily เด็กคนนี้ this guy เก่งมากมีปัญญามากเรียนเก่ง
มีสติ
มีสติข้างถนนต้องมีสติไม่มีสติรถทับ
I think you use the wind a lot and like I remember when someone passed away and you said oh just like the wind or just another
when Kun Sujit's husband died, I remember Kun Sujit, you told me you were grieving and Ajahn Sujin said you're just grieving like for the wind. It's for the wind.
So could we say now it's like we cling to the wind all the time? It's
a good expression. When it's gone, it's gone. Mm. So everything now, like it's like the wind, it's gone.
It's gone already.
My mother liked that too when I told her. Mm. She liked that story a lot.
It's gone like the wind.
Okay. Well, special things like that, I sometimes don't remember. This is well, a feeling, well, I've been in the
Jambai.
And
I remember that one too.
Yeah. 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 Like Jambai. So,
it's gone.
So, Kun Sujit told me.
Yeah, but they have Jambai. Like when
I remember at the time she was saying, I said, oh, how you manage a human. She said, oh, Jan just said, just like the wind gone, and then I felt happy. But most people would misunderstand and wouldn't. It depends on the person whether they can appreciate it.
Junko doesn't like that story.
Who?
Oh, Junko. Oh. So when I die, you just.
Say, like the wind gone.
Happy. But then again, that time. Pajit has the understanding, so she has that accumulation, so she can understand right away. Maybe, you know, some of us here might not have that sort of understanding.
Actually, for her, it was the condition to really become interested in the Dharma, right?
Yeah. And this is what Buddha said to Rahula, too.
What did he say?
Like tattoo, that's all. It's gone. No matter it's what kind of tattoo. What's gone, it's gone.
Only element.
Yeah, the element that we spit on and the air element that's passed. And your car's a tattoo. Okay, I have a few more points here on viveka. I think we discussed this when we were last here and
good
you
point.
Were here.
Good to bring up.
But it's always more to bring up because it's quite subtle, I think. So, first of all, here, this is from the Anapanasati Sutta. And how develop bhikkhus, how repeatedly practice do the...
Anapanasati is another good one.
Do the seven enlightenment factors... perfect clear vision and deliverance. Here, because a bhikkhu develops a mindfulness of enlightenment factor dependent on seclusion, on fading away, on cessation resulting in relinquishment. Here, dependent on seclusion. So here, this is referring to the third kind of viveka.
Mm-hmm.
Not yet. Okay, what is this referring
to? Step by step.
Step by step.
Mm-hmm. Step by step.
So go into the forest first. Bodily delusion.
With no understanding.
If you're in the forest alone, hayayam you.
With fear. With fear. Lion, snake.
Uncomfortable.
It's not the final seclusion, and it's not the forest with no understanding. So the bhikkhu develops a mindfulness of enlightenment factor dependent on seclusion. What is meant?
Did Buddha teach anyone to live together in groups with friends and families and people in the country, or just live alone? Because when there is attachment, it's not just attachment to one person, more than one, the whole country and the whole world. Is that the way one should live?
Normal life?
No, with idea of people and things around us.
Just, he taught that
object
one should
of clinging.
Right, live alone with seeing and hearing, with reality.
But also with bodily seclusion too. Is that right?
It depends on how much panya you have. If you have little panya, very little, and you just want to go to the forest, is it the accumulation of being alone, or just want to go to the forest?
So for most people it would be just want to get some result. But how about for someone with more panya?
It's one's nature.
They like to
live
alone.
Yeah. Because even among monks, some monks can live alone with right understanding of reality, no one there. So it means two things, right understanding and place for those who have developed panya enough to see that it's one's own accumulation or
to
information.
Really enjoy living
yeah,
like it, to
yeah.
be satisfied. It's helpful.
Upali would like to go to the forest.
Yes.
But Buddha said that you would be more useful, benefit for the others if you won't go to the forest.
But that's because he could help the others.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't mean he could have gone to the forest and still become an arahant.
No, he was already.
He was already an arahant.
Yeah. But he would like to go because of his accumulation.
But for the person who has understanding, they would naturally gradually incline towards solitude,
yeah,
maybe?
Yeah. It does mean that everyone would like to go. Like Ananda, see?
Yeah.
Or other monks, they follow the Buddha.
There's two types of layperson. There's the layperson who lives a normal life attached to sense pleasures, but develops understanding. He is a good disciple. Then there's the layperson who's not so attached to sense pleasures and lives a more solitary life, but still develop panya.
No, even today, many people would like to live alone in the house, not going to see anyone at all. It doesn't mean that the person understands reality, but it's only accumulation. But that is not what Buddha means.
Yes, what did he mean?
Develop right understanding to see that actually there's no one at all. Live alone. No one.
But the Dhamma Vinaya does seem to, when they talk about layperson, they differentiate two types, right? The the one who's caught up in the daily life but still develops panya, and the one who's not so caught up but still develops correctly as well, right?
Different by
accumulations. Yes, exactly.
So like Visakha.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Visakha was sotapanna but still very attached to the five strands of sense pleasure.
So here when it refers to the mindfulness enlightenment factor depending on seclusion, it's referring to the mindfulness living alone with the realities here.
And to degree of arahata. And different accumulation again, even arahatas. Some live in the forest, some live.
So this is regardless of the
came to see Buddha at all, after enlightenment. Some would like to follow him.
And
should it be the question of panya, if anyone raised this question of?
Yes.
Yeah, I guess.
Instead of thinking about place.
Yeah.
Well, it's a tricky question because I think we have to be a little bit careful and say no, it doesn't mean bodily seclusion. It only means citta, because bodily seclusion is possible.
What about children or a boy in the field alone with a cow?
Of course, of course.
Just sit and think a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that what Buddha taught?
So when they're talking about bodily seclusion, it also means with kusala, of course.
Understanding too.
Understanding.
Yeah. Or the teaching concern, panya. Mm.
But it's not that it automatically means only citta and no bodily seclusion. Sometimes it includes both bodily seclusion and...
Right.
Yeah. So, Sarah, that's something to think about. Sometimes your writing tends a little bit towards it always means citta with panya, right? And you tend to sort of veer away from any indication of bodily seclusion.
Well, I think it has to be with panya, as Kunsuchin just said, because otherwise, like the person in the forest, if it's not with panya,
of course,
if it's...
Yeah. Nevertheless, so there is also bodily seclusion. There also is sometimes genuine bodily seclusion there too. It can be, right? And there can be other times when there's... What's the word for viveka with pure citta?
Citta viveka.
There's citta viveka without kaya viveka sometimes, right? There can be...
Usually citta viveka means samadhi, the degree, different degrees of samadhi. Yeah.
Well, Ajahn also said that the point is to understand that there is no one. That means anywhere.
So even in the forest or even alone in the...
So what about the term is just a quiet and remote place like kaya viveka, just being there in one sense. But when Buddha taught about it, it does mean that just go there.
Yeah.
But it means that...
Citta viveka also, right? Or something.
Right understanding must be there too.
Oh, I see.
It means being in that quiet place. With with panya,
For most people, it
to whom?
No, exactly.
To whom did he urge to have kaya viveka?
For those who had the accumulations.
Right. Mm-hmm. Even Upali would like to go to the forest, but he said, "No, not for you."
We were discussing yesterday about the difference between certain conditions being support condition naturally and going or following those, looking for those supports or condition, thinking that's the way to develop awareness. So for some people they may naturally be in the forest or naturally like living alone, and that may turn out to be a support condition for understanding, but that's different from going to the forest or planning to live alone or planning not to talk about anything except Dharma in order to have understanding, which is what most people usually understand.
Yeah, I mean, it's just so it has to be phrased carefully, that's all. Mm. When you're trying to explain that to people, not to, like, get too much and say, don't ever be alone, you've got the wrong path if you're thinking you want to be alone. I mean, you have to be a little bit careful when you phrase these matters to make it clear that it's...
Yeah, I don't think I've never said anyone don't go alone or don't go to the forest, but if you go to the forest or if you live alone thinking that is the way to develop understanding, it's wrong. It's wrong view. So...
Why do you go?
What's the purpose of going? Mm-hmm. Well, they'll say the purpose of going is to develop samatha and vipassana, but so this shows the wrong understanding. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because it means that they have an idea that going to that place will be...
They think that's the real condition. They don't see the main conditions of developing understanding usually.
Even if it's... What do you mean, main and...
Well, so say in the Satipatthana commentary, when it says, what's one of the conditions for the enlightenment factor of... what's investigation? What's the Pali for investigation?
Dharma vichaya,
and the commentary says, hearing the Dharma, discussing fine points of Dharma, keeping the room clean, you know, And you think, well, why keep the room clean? What's that? I can understand hearing the Dharma. I can understand discussing the Dharma. Why keep your room clean? But the commentary says that's one of the conditions.
I remember bringing this question up once, maybe last year, and Achan said something, if you were living in a mess, is that good? Like, is, you know, if you're... keep the room clean and tidy, because if you've got a great big mess, you probably end up with rats in there with you.
It's colour.
Colour.
And home and
yeah, but you can't help thinking. If it's dirty, you think dirty.
Anyway, but if you take that wrongly, you're going to be very, very careful about cleaning and think, I'm really developing.
It's not clean. What about the citta?
Yeah.
So why...
that's what I was saying.
Yeah. I mean, actually, even in a dirty room, the panya can arise, right?
Sure, I'm not saying that it can't, but generally, you know, clean body, clean area.
So I just possibly
clean
mind.
My room matches.
Just clean the room without thinking about the mind or what?
Mm.
Or not clean the room and try to clean the mind.
That's how it is.
But it's like not eating. Like, if you eat, it doesn't mean there's going to be more understanding than if you're hungry. But it just happens. One may find for oneself that, you know, if you eat healthy food or your room is clean...
And why not clean the room? The idea of self.
You mean there's more idea of self if you don't clean the room?
Because I'm lazy, too lazy to clean, or what? Not understanding realities.
Your broom's on holiday.
My
ban.
My
ban, your housekeeper.
Yeah.
It's easier to keep clean if you have a housekeeper.
But I think that it indicates the very subtle accumulation.
Yes. Well, a reflection of someone who's wise probably would have a cleaner room to some extent.
Yeah.
Not necessarily.
It's like whether they would eat more healthily or something, not more.
Just for themselves again, without understanding.
Well, would a wise person live in a very dirty room and never clean it?
Never?
Almost never. It's hard to say.
How wise?
Yeah, it's not wise. Yeah. It's like saying, would a Sotapanna have many, many grandchildren and grandchildren and want more? And Visakha did want more.
And one can see that monks' life, what do monks do?
Clean their rooms, that's for sure.
They don't have anything else to do.
They sweep outside and then they clean inside.
Yeah,
everybody sweeps the dirt outside and comes inside again and they sweep it out.
They're happy with that because it gives them occupation. It's a form of exercise anyway.
Do you do a lot of cleaning when you're a monk, Jonathan?
Pretty handy with a broom, yeah.
I'm happy when no one asks about who cleaned the Buddha's kuti.
You're happy when no one asks?
Question.
Who did? That's true. My son learned how to do housekeeping in the monk.
He probably didn't need a cleaner in his room.
I mean, when he was not a monk, he would never think of cleaning. So he had always someone to do it for him.
He had an attendant monk. It's one of the jobs the attendant monk would do. Davis? Oh, the Davis did it. Right?
I'm happy no one asks about this.
Anyway, Sarah, about this Kaya Viveka thing and so on, I understand exactly what Arjun's saying about must be wisdom with Kaya Viveka, but I still think we need to be careful and say...
When you understand reality better and better, would you like to live with many people around? Or it becomes one's own nature, little by little,
to see.
It doesn't matter.
But Betty's saying, doesn't matter, so...
No, but when you have wisdom, if there happen to be 10 people living in with you, okay. If there are not 10 people living with you, it's okay.
Depending on right understanding, like Sotapanna Ananda, many people were around him, many, almost all day or something like that, I'm not sure. And some monk just live alone, and the other monks blame him for living alone. See?
Mm-hmm. But you're indicating that the accumulation would gradually change to be more alone.
It depends on the individuals too.
Then you're alone anyway.
Yeah, we just talked about
that. But I'm trying to relate to the suttas that Kaya Viveka is on occasion praised, and Ajahn's saying, yes, if it's with Panya. So we have to be careful not to say, oh, if you're thinking of Kaya Viveka, you've definitely got wrong view, because that's a little bit, you know, we have to phrase it to, so that they understand that it's with Panya.
You also have to be careful in the suttas, because sometimes Kaya Viveka is
referring
to Chetasikas so it's, you have to kind of look at the context of each sutta to see what is meant. But sometimes even things that one reads, it suggests that these are beneficial requisites for developing understanding, so that can be, one has to be very careful when one writes about something like the Viveka or even Kaya Viveka, because people have an idea that it refers to, like you said about, you know, keeping the house clean or something. They think that it means, oh, going to the quiet place or cleaning the house as a condition to have more understanding. So they take these as things to do, and that's not the meaning at all.
Then what about reading Tipitaka with the understanding that Buddha taught about the truth, that's all? There is Kaya Viveka, and there is Citta Viveka, and there is Upadhi Viveka, that's all.
It's not, you mean it's not an instruction book, it's just telling the truth?
It's not just what one should or shouldn't. Okay. It's just about the truth.
The truth, right.
That's
what I'm really trying to point to, is what, you know, what is understanding, what is the reality, because otherwise it is a to-do at all, prescription at all.
But occasionally I read your post a little bit, just the way you phrase it, I know what you mean, but it's a little bit pushing just a little bit the other way, like you, it's almost like you're pushing the other way.
And discuss it on the list, I'd be glad.
It's so subtle, it's so hard to phrase it, I can't think of a good way to put it myself.
I always think it's not far enough, because I think it has to always come back more and more to this moment and the understanding now, because what everyone would like to do would be to follow some rules, to clean the house or eat certain kinds of food or to go to the quiet place or to meditate. If there's no understanding of reality, then it's...
Whereas Ajahn's saying it's the truth, it's not a method or something, right?
Yeah.
This reminds me of the discussion we were having this morning about the Ken H thing and reading the suttas, and we were making a distinction between instructions for Satipatthana and other, but there aren't any instructions for Satipatthana, really. It's always a question of the truth being explained. And that's why it doesn't matter what the truth sometimes concerns Satipatthana directly.
Yes.
And then other times there are truths that are more conventional in their nature.
Yes. But it's not that when the Buddha is explaining how to make a two-stick, it's not some secret code for having Satipatthana, is it?
Is it not the truth, sir?
It's of course,
It's just...
taught everything, which is the truth.
Just what's useful and beneficial.
Well, I mean, when a king came to the Buddha and said, do you think I should attack this other kingdom now or later? And the Buddha said, the now is not so good time. It'll be something like that. Do you remember that?
Just that situation, any situation, any kind.
This is not a good time to attack
just
that kingdom.
About... any situation, any good time, but not that particular situation.
Well, that's actually what he said was, if the other kingdom has been paying respect to the elders and has been doing so-and-so, they cannot be defeated.
Yeah.
So he didn't actually say that. Well, not a good time.
But what
again,
I'm saying,
again, it's in the form of it's in the form of truths,
yeah, right.
rather than
right.
you should do this or shouldn't do that.
Like before, I remember you used to write sometimes. Yeah, it is a difference between us because sometimes you used to write, oh, you know, talk about going alone to reflect on death or something. Whereas for me, I would write now, you know, surrounded by people, there may be conditions to reflect on death, but not by planning to think on death, not by going somewhere quiet, you know, because it depends on the citta at this very moment. That's conditioned. Because if one has an idea, oh, I'll go somewhere to reflect on death, or I'll go to the quiet place, again, it's like, oh, I'll have more metta later. It's like wanting something for oneself, not understanding the reality now.
Well, yeah. Not
it's like trying to have more samatha, trying to have more calm. So I think it is a subtle difference.
But where did you say? What did I say? I said.
Why not now?
Exactly. I think it always has to come now.
There's some of that other person that why not now?
But I don't. Did my post say I'm recommending people to go to a quiet place? I don't think so.
I think that it would just be the.
I was talking about when I used to read Nina's books and so on. There's a cemetery by my old house, and I'd go and. Read in there,
right. Or reflect on death or something like this, or I'd like to go to a quiet place to reflect on death or something. Whereas for me, I wouldn't think like that. I don't think about, oh, later when I have time I'm going to reflect on death.
I've never said that. I can't ever
he just described what he did.
Well, like I described when I'm hiking in the forest. And think about those things. I don't think I said you have to go and do that.
No.
And I think he was trying to show the value of reflecting on death.
Yes. But the point is it can be right now with people you know, if one has any idea at all about reflecting on death or you know, I think it can be quite subtle or any idea of practicing samatha or selecting an object or having more samatha in one's life, then it's not just understanding what's conditioned naturally or having more, resolving to have more metta later. I think any of these things can.
And what's the meaning of reflecting on death? The way you reflect, how do you reflect on it?
On death.
And it can happen next citta, that it's a metta.
That's all.
And then, what else? See? What is more useful than that? Understanding that this moment of understanding reality, it means that you have been reflected on death. Because you know that this is a moment of understanding. Next moment, we don't know what would happen. Not just thinking about, oh, I will die and I will be better than yesterday because I don't know tomorrow where will I be, something like that. That is not reflecting on death, because you see that death and reflecting on death is not just thinking about death, but it's more than that. If it's death now, what should be known now? Or what should develop now?
But the reflection on death, assuming it's done
properly,
but I mean that conditions also, just the rough level of thinking about death conditions more awareness possibly of the present moment
because
it's just this moment.
I think that it's hard to understand reflecting on death, how much, how long, what way.
But I think what Achan is actually saying is that you'll know that when you know the present moment.
Rather than just thinking about death to come soon or later. What one gets from reflecting on death.
Okay. But we were talking metta this morning, right? And you were saying metta is
What's the difference between metta and death then?
Different after.
Yes, I know, but yeah. You seem to be saying don't worry about death.
Because you see that we will die, we all die,
yes.
But what would the next life be if we still have lobha, dosa, moha and ignorance?
Mm-hmm.
See?
Mm-hmm. So that's why thinking like this is a way of reflecting on death, right? To understand
very
that
Very short, just enough. Mm. Enough?
Right.
See, is that reflecting on death?
Yes.
Enough?
Yes.
So, what else? Thinking on death again? Or just that?
Just that.
So, it's very short. And then?
And then awareness.
Okay.
So it's not, I'd like to go in a quiet place and reflect on death. Because
who said that? I've never said that.
Some people might misunderstand what is meant by reflection on death.
Oh.
Like reflection on this and that. Yeah. They think that
one
has to take time thinking of it like metta in the corner of the room. But actually it's this moment.
Yeah.
Right now.
Isn't death one of the kamatana for samatha? And doesn't it support high level of samatha?
So one has to understand what kamatana means.
Yes.
Object of right understanding. There's some different moments, different level.
Right. What sort of reflection of death would support... does it support jhana, a reflection on death?
No, only jhana.
Access.
Only access.
Kusala citta arises because one knows that one will die.
Hmm.
Maybe next moment. It doesn't mean that thinking in terms of death, try so hard to think of death.
It's like, Robert, people have the idea, they read about the hindrances of samatha, you know, dwelling and people and this and that, and then they have the idea, oh, better to go to a temple, cut off, have a particular dwelling, cut off contact with people and telephone and books in order to develop samatha, but that's complete opposite of the meaning of what is meant if they have the idea of following these impediments.
I would say they go there without wisdom, but those things are minor conditions, but their wisdom is the main condition. And if they go and take those as... they think those will somehow develop wisdom or something, obviously they're wrong, but they're given in the suttas or it's given in the Visuddhimagga, so they must be minor conditions. But obviously wisdom is... like samadhi is the prime thing, right?
But if they have any idea at all of following those... those list of impediments in order to develop samatha, then it shows no wisdom at all.
Mm. This is a little bit hard statement, isn't it? A demonstration if they agree with the list in the Visuddhimagga.
Not with the agree, if they follow the list, if they try to follow the list, like if they have the idea they will go to a particular kind of dwelling, or they will disassociate with people, they will find a quiet place in order to develop samatha. This is not understanding anything about the development of samatha.
It needs to be put in a more detailed way to explain exactly, you know, to stress on the lack of panya maybe. To just say that bluntly.
And the thing is that once they hear,
usually it is true.
After hearing Sarah talk about the value of Chitta Viveka, you know, understanding, why don't you just accept that and close the topic? You know, why do you want it?
Because in the suttas there's also Kaya Viveka, not only Chitta Viveka.
Right,
so it has to be explained carefully what Kaya Viveka is, and that although it is talking about sometimes talking about solitude, it has to be with panya, like Ajahn was saying. I think
they argue against the idea of the importance of Chitta Viveka.
They want to go into solitude, they want to cut the impediments in order to develop
samatha. I understand where the wrong view is coming from, but we have to be careful when we're putting this in the
we are completely in accordance with all the suttas and so on.
Okay, so what's important is our own understanding when we speak. So how do you understand these impediments to samatha? Do you understand that they
for someone
developing samatha, they are...
If someone has the conditions to develop samatha, which I don't think there are many people...
I think that one does not yet understand what samatha is. Mm. For example, metta. Mm. If it's not now, how can it develop? Mm. But they try to have metta to this person and that person without now. So it's impossible. The thing that they would develop there, the conditions and understanding. So if there is no understanding of samatha, the citta without lobha and dosa and moha, it's impossible, no matter one goes where.
Anywhere. Mm-hmm. So there's no point talking about going to a quiet place if they don't understand anything about
samatha. Nevertheless, those impediments are in the Visuddhimagga.
We think of that, not the misunderstanding.
Mm. Yeah.
See?
Yeah.
The right understanding should...
That's the prime thing, and what needs to be stressed. And unfortunately, people don't...
Yes.
You're probably the only person who ever talks about that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, should one select object for oneself to develop it? Or, no time, it's now to be kusala. Don't think of future. Or tomorrow, or this evening. Mm-hmm. So at this moment, what can be object of samatha? Because understanding reality right now is also samatha. Mm. We don't have to seek for other kind of samatha like corpse or skin or hair.
Or even death.
Because of the misunderstanding of samatha, so they try to separate and try to make it up. Mm. Not knowing that at this moment to understand citta, whether it is kusala or akusala, because without panya, samatha cannot develop at all. So the right object for samatha, even understanding dhamma, is object for samatha and vipassana too.
This question came up in a conversation with a friend, and we were talking about compassion, and I was making the point that about conditions. We were talking about what conditions would need to lead to the rising of compassion, and I said one of the conditions I thought was metta, to have compassion, and. I said, if you don't feel metta, because she couldn't see the difference between metta and dharana. So I had to explain to her the difference between metta and dharana, because it's a very difficult idea to understand the difference. And so I said, in order for you to have a sense of wanting to help somebody in lesser circumstances, there has to be some sense of loving kindness arising in order. So I just wondered if somebody, anybody, John, or if anybody would like to care, have made comments about that, that would be of help.
Because you see that when citta is kusala, there is no dosa and no lobha. And when it's the feeling towards being, the adosa is metta. See? So, and karuna is that it does not arise with kusala all the time, because it's not the sapa citta sadharana, it's not the sopana sadharana. So sometimes karuna arises with kusala citta, sometimes it does not arise, but adosa must arise.
Every
time.
When there is karuna, there is metta.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Because metta is adosa. And one can see that what is meant is not just the term metta or adosa, but it's the moment of being friendly, truthfully, sincerely, and that is metta. So when you see some people or someone who has pain or in trouble, then by being friendly to all beings, you can help that person. So metta is ordinary with people in daily life to be friendly to, and karuna when time comes for such circumstance that that person needs help. Because people try to think of metta, try to have metta, but not being friendly. So it's just stick to the idea of developing metta, but what about citta? And because
what about if they try to be friendly?
Loba? Or seeing that everyone is beings, the same, seeing, hearing, smelling. Okay. Loba, dosa, dukkha, domanasa. All are the same in this life.
There's a guy I read an interview and he said, it's like we're all on a plane that's going down. The pilot's just announced that the plane's going to crash and we're all on the same plane. Right. So I thought that was kind of dharmic idea. It's like we're all in it together, in this life together, and soon to die, right?
We all have dukkha. We all have...
Yeah. All heading to die, so yeah, why not have metta everywhere?
And when one is trying to have metta, that is not metta.
Like even if one has the idea, okay, let's think about how we're all in an aeroplane together in order to have metta, then that would be loba. So it's quite subtle. Trying to have all the time.
And I was wondering, people.
But then what
talk
would be the conditions to have metta arise?
Metta now.
Not hearing
the
story.
Understanding the characteristic of metta. So just being friendly now, and then understanding the value of that quality.
People talk about sitting down and trying to have metta and then radiating in all directions. And the other day I was thinking, what appeared like metta, I was just reflecting on it. The basis of that would be, is there metta now? Would you distinguish between different people, or it's just anyone, the next person you meet you have metta, and the next person you have metta, no matter your friend or your enemy. Wouldn't that be the basis for the kind of radiating metta to all beings?
What do you mean by radiating?
In the text somewhere,
they
talk about
it's like rupa, or what? That can radiate?
No, it's just probably...
What about when you have metta for everyone, every being, then it's there?
That's what I mean. One of the... If right now you can't have metta for everyone, then what I'm saying is that right now I could be here having metta, and then going out meeting a stranger having metta.
So it's not radiate.
It's not radiating, but it shows that the idea that it's not limited to just a particular person. This is the basis of that.
And the other can feel that is. But people think that that is the way it radiates, but it's not like that.
Can you explain? Yeah.
You can know who metta you see more and more and more, and that's the meaning of radiate.
I think radiate is just the wrong word.
I remember once being in Royette,
in a forest
temple. And there was an English guy who was doing loving kindness meditation. And the Thais used to come around and make a noise around him. So he used to get really angry at them. So his loving kindness
to all except the monks around.
Didn't work.
some people think, they hear about someone who's having a problem on the other side of the world, so they think, right, we can help them.
I'll zap them.
And so they think of them and radiate metta to them, and people on East Sangha write about how, this can really cure people and so on. If enough people get together and do that, we can help to cure them. People really believe that.
Yeah, look in the newspaper a couple of months ago, all these monks got together to pray for the king.
Yeah, but I mean, a lot of the times when people help other people, it's only because they feel very sorry for them. And it's actually helping them.
That's correct.
Yeah,
yes,
they help themselves
exactly
by helping the others. So it's lacking in metta.
Lacking?
I don't think there's metta there. I think
they're
feeling very sorry for someone.
Mm-hmm.
So they feel that if they help them, they overcome that sorrow. So it's really
not real
metta.
It's not real government.
Yeah, it's not real metta.
Okay, this is the kind of quote that people write back to me about seclusion when I write about mental seclusion and development of punya, and the kind of thing that Robert's referring to from the commentary to the Dhammapada. So this is the kind of thing people quote. Let him develop disengagement such as physical disengagement. Here, physical disengagement is solitude physically. Mental disengagement means the eight attainments. Disengagements from the substrates is nibbana. Of these three, physical disengagement dispels the harms accruing from attachment to company. Mental disengagement dispels attachment to the defilements. Disengagement from substrates dispels the state of being attached to the sankharas. Physical disengagement is a condition necessary for mental disengagement, and mental disengagement is a condition that's necessary for disengagement from the substrates. It has been said physical disengagement is a quality of those who are physically withdrawn from the crowd of humans who delight in detachment, and so on and so on. So how would you respond to this? Just say, well...
It's the truth.
I think the key phrase is delight in detachment, though. Who does that refer to?
Different levels of understanding.
Can I ask that question, Ajahn? It said at the end, could you read the last one? About delight and detachment. The very end of the passage you read.
Physical disengagement is a quality of those who are physically withdrawn from the crowd of humans who delight in detachment.
Right. Is delighting in detachment a reference to level of understanding?
They don't think they delight in attachment.
True.
The ones who are withdrawing.
True, yeah. I not true.
True.
Right.
Okay, let's just go let's go back to the beginning. Let him develop disengagement such as physical disengagement.
Now.
Disengage from what?
Well, now, no physical disengagement now.
At all.
It could be detachment from sense objects.
Right, exactly, because actually the meaning of kaya viveka is detachment from sensuous objects, right? So even now there can be kaya viveka at this moment, detachment from sensuous objects. So when it says develop disengagement such as physical engagement, it actually means detachment from seeing from sensuous objects. So it doesn't
But it also has the meaning of, in this context, physical seclusion also, I don't know.
Because object is physical.
Yeah.
here at this moment, seeing as physical object.
But I also think that passage is also referring to someone not getting together in company, not enjoying company so much, right? It's also the conventional sense
too, right?
It
can be right now, and it can be there too.
And it can be there too, right?
It's not that it's only right now,
yes.
But it can be anywhere. It doesn't mean any more.
But I think that is implying also some level of conventional detachment too.
If there's no detachment now, can there be detachment when one is away?
Probably not.
See? Yeah. So it doesn't matter as there is attachment, detachment here.
Yes.
So there can be detachment there too.
Mm. Okay, next line. Here, physical disengagement is solitude physically. So
when one is there only, or one is here.
So even when one's here, so physical disengagement is solitude physically. It can refer to this moment of detachment from visible object clinging to.
Okay.
From sensuous objects.
But also it can refer to the person
anywhere.
Who is staying.
Anywhere.
But it,
I mean, the words are...
But when there's clinging, no matter where it clings.
That's not the meaning.
So in the opposite way,
when
there's no clinging here, no matter where,
in
a quiet place or in
no
place.
If one thinks that the disengagement has from sensuous objects is in the field and that this is what they're, or in the forest, then how does it make any sense?
Let's look at another thing on the Vinaya. When the monk goes on an alms round, the Vinaya recommends that he looks 6 feet in front sort of thing, doesn't look around and so on. So there is some element of the Buddha recommending or talking about some sort of physical, you know, trying to physically reduce some sense objects as well, right?
Only physically?
Obviously mentally is more important.
But can one help not to think while one looks there?
Of course not. Yeah, I mean, it's useless if the monk only follows
it's not just the word to do, but it's the understanding.
Yes.
Because the more there is understanding, do you still pay attention to the object, to nimitta and anupayanchana, like before? Or it becomes your one's nature? Not to cling, not to think about?
Well, that's a long way.
Until becoming an arahata.
Yeah.
Also, in the case of monks, there are other considerations, such as how they are seen by the lay people, and also the risk to slipping from the monk's life into the lay
life. Arahata can stay at home, but not arahata. See?
Yeah. Okay. How does an anagami stay at home with no more sense desire?
Yeah, because of not enough situation or accumulation, like parents, blind parents and things.
Yeah.
So just carrying on with this a bit, mental disengagement means the eight attainments. Here, the eight attainments. Right, the Lokuttara Cittas. Right, the eight attainments, right. Disengagement from the substrates is nirvana. Of these three, physical disengagement dispels the harm accruing from attachment to company. So here, physical disengagement dispels the harm accruing from company. Physical disengagement,
with
again,
understanding.
With understanding. So here is it, I am referring to the detachment from sensuous objects.
Heavy mopanya.
Yeah. So nothing to do with going to a quiet place, no matter where.
I'd like to voice John's expression in the eight attainments. Are they? What are the eight attainments?
Magga, Pala,
Sakadagni.
Okay.
Are you sure?
Is that what it means, the eight attainments?
Oh, unless it means the eight jhanas, does it?
Okay, let's go back. Right, because it could be related to the citta viveka.
Yeah, it might mean the eight jhanas.
Yeah. Okay, go back a step. Mental disengagement means the eight attainments.
So,
Might be some much.
Keep on.
Okay. Of these three, physical disengagement dispels the harms accruing from attachment to company. Mental disengagement dispels attachments to the defilements.
And from this?
Disengagement from substrates dispels the state of being attached to the sankharas.
Samadhi and panya.
Samadhi and panya, so it's the citta viveka, the jhana. Physical disengagement is the condition necessary for mental disengagement. So physical disengagement, the detachment from sensuous objects, is the condition necessary for mental disengagement, for the attainment of jhanas. Okay. Here, and mental disengagement is a condition that is necessary for disengagement from the substrate.
Sankhara,
yes. So if mental disengagement refers to the development of samatha, the
citta-viveka,
so in what way would it mean that mental disengagement is the condition for the upadhi viveka?
Without panya, can it be then?
I see. But if we're saying that the mental disengagement refers to citta viveka, and we're saying this is the condition for the sankhara viveka, isn't that saying jhana is a condition for more?
In terms of different stages of right understanding.
Okay. See,
without right understanding, that's these three do not mean anything at all.
Yeah.
It has been said physical disengagement is a quality of those who are physically withdrawn, and the writer put, from the crowd of humans who delight in detachment. Okay. Physical disengagement is a quality of those who are physically withdrawn, who delight in detachment. Now, the translators put in brackets from the crowd of humans, but I think that's wrong. I think by who are physically withdrawn, it means from the saints' objects who delight in detachment. Is this
because people are what? If they are not sense objects.
Yeah.
People ask
you something. Yeah. And we don't have to think about developing jhana at all.
No.
Because even the vipassana jhana is upajara samadhi.
Mm-hmm.
No need to have other extra samadhi.
Upajara jhana.
Upajara. Except the lokutra is apana.
Yes. So even nama rupa parachita is
upajara.
Mental disengagement is of those with pure thoughts who have arrived at the highest purity of mind. Disengagement from substrates is of persons who are free from all attachments, who are liberated from the sankharas. So let his develop and increase the threefold disengagement. Let him arrive at that and live therein. This is the meaning. So actually here, it's just referring to the development of understanding, beginning with the development of sati, samvara, sila, the guarding of the sense doors, and developing understanding higher and higher to the highest one, I think. So people quote this kind of thing and think that it's referring, they say, oh, kaya viveka, physical solitude. But I think we have to understand what that physical solitude means.
I think the best sutra is where the Buddha, the monk, there's a monk who tells the other monks, he lives alone, and the monks say, why do you live alone? And he said, da-da-da-da-da-da. And he goes to the Buddha asks him to come, and the Buddha says, is it true, monk, that you praise solitude and live alone and so on? And the monk says, yes, I live alone and I praise solitude.
And the Buddha says, well, listen, monk, and I will explain the Dharma. I do not, yeah, this is one kind of solitude, one kind of viveka. I do not disagree with you here. That is true. But also, monk, listen while I explain another type. And then he explains about detachment from the five senses and so on. So that it's sort of like the Buddha's not denying physical solitude, but he's explaining it in a deeper way. And I think that's the way we should phrase it too on the list and so on. Instead of saying a little bit, really, no, denying anything to do with being alone physically, conventionally, also, but explain the deeper meaning also, you know. And explain that also there can be citta viveka and so on, even when you're with people, of course. Yeah, you explain both, but you don't deny completely the physical solitude, otherwise it gives people an edge, a little knife edge where they can stick it in, you know.
This people give this as the example of how the Buddha praised physical solitude, living alone. But actually, when
with understanding,
and when you praise it alone, but for some might.
Excuse me, because the end of life should be living alone, without anyone, but without attachment to anything. Not just for being Sotapanna. The teaching lead on and on to the Arahata.
But it has nothing to do with living physically alone as we understand it, like in the forest or the quiet place.
A little bit it does though, doesn't it? The Arahat has no attachment at all to people, so he doesn't want to live around a whole lot of people.
Living where doesn't matter at all.
Anywhere,
you
can live anywhere.
Yeah.
Well, he can't live in society.
We should understand what people think about Kaya Viveka in daily life too, in their usual meaning. Or when one is alone at home or wherever, with or without understanding. It is kaya viveka in the sense that there is nobody else, but with right or not. Yeah.
Right, we need to explain the deeper meaning, of course.
Because if you say anything about suggesting in a quiet place, it's not understanding anything about kaya viveka. Because kaya viveka can be just as much at this moment as in the quiet place. So that's why I would never suggest someone that part of the meaning means living physically
alone. But it does, part of the meaning does mean at times physically alone, doesn't it? Conventionally, doesn't it? That's what I don't say.
What is understood is with right understanding.
So part of the meaning is sometimes that it is physically alone conventionally, but of course it also means with understanding.
Because sometimes we live alone and sometimes
we live alone. Sometimes we live alone, sometimes with people. So like at this moment here, the physical disengagement is from the sense objects, whether alone or with people.
The point is it's not a recommendation to have more physical solitude. Per se.
Like here, it gives for the meaning of viveka, according to the Nidesa, bodily detachment, kaya viveka, is abiding in solitude, free from alluring sensuous objects. So people take the solitude meaning away from people, but actually solitude from sensuous objects means, like at this moment or wherever one is, the detachment from the sense object.
In the absolute.